The Office of Intelligence Analysis is responsible for meeting the intelligence and information needs of a pretty broad range of customers, starting with the secretary and the senior leadership of the department, and including all of the department's components. We also provide, and this is one of our sort of unique statutory responsibilities, is to provide intelligence and information support to our state and local, tribal, and territorial customers and partners. And we also are a part of the intelligence community, and we provide products and information to the broader national intelligence effort as well. So we have a very broad-ranging set of customers and requirements, and we're pretty busy.
Let's talk about the realignment plans. They were announced last year, and you are responsible for how that's going. So one of the reasons we invited you over is just to get a progress report. What do those plans entail, and where are you now?
Well, where we are now is that we've settled on our structure, and we're briefing it to Congress. It's not 100% final, but it's pretty close. And I can talk to you sort of at the broad level about what we're trying to do.
Sure.
And the goal was to align our structure more closely to our missions and responsibilities. And we've done that by clarifying our analytic structures to align very closely to the missions of the department as outlined in the Quadrennial Homeland Security Review, which was recently published. So you can now actually look at my organizational chart and find organizations that are responsible for homeland counterterrorism, for border and immigration security, for cyber analytics support, sort of our key mission pillars. The other couple of things that we did to improve the efficiency of the office was we created a new plans, programs, and performance measurement activity that will help me meet my responsibilities as the chief intelligence officer of the department managing the broader DHS intelligence enterprise. So we have a staff there that helps us do that and measure how well we're doing. And the other thing that we did that was key was our state and local our efforts to support our state and local partners. We had an organization devoted to that was buried a few levels down in the organization, and that's now been elevated so that it reports directly to me and my principal deputy, Bart Johnson.
Oh.
And we also have significantly increased the amount of resources and focus on fulfilling that information sharing responsibility with state and locals.
Now, did intelligence and analysis come composed of several different component agencies that were ingathered just as DHS as a whole was? And did the existence of different pieces put together to form the office cause the need originally for this realignment?
No, I think INA was created sort of from whole cloth initially. And when it was initially created, it was actually Intelligence Analysis and Infrastructure Protection, IAIP. So after 3 or 4 years, it sort of those two pieces were separated out. So INA has existed more or less in its current form only for about 3 or 4 years. And really what I was just trying to do was clarify missions, accountability, and increase the efficiency of the organization. We hired a lot of people when INA was initially stood up and the department was stood up from various parts of the intelligence community. So we have a lot of different cultures mixing in the current organization.
I was going to ask about that because intelligence sharing, we hear a lot about that and about the progress that has been made there and the goals that still need to be made. And when you have those different cultures, is that a mindset that part of what you have to do is help overcome that?
It is in a way. I mean, I think it's very helpful to have all of the different perspectives that we have. People who have come from CIA, from the military, from law enforcement. Our office is kind of at the crossroads between intelligence and law enforcement. It's really important to have both of those perspectives. But the interesting and fun thing about this job is that we're doing a new kind of intelligence and analysis for which there really is not a template. The kind of products that we're trying to produce, no one's really done before. And we're sort of inventing it as we go along. And it's good to have that mix of cultures and perspectives because I think it helps us be more creative in what we should be doing to serve our customers.
We're speaking with Karen Wagner. She's the Undersecretary in the Office of Intelligence and Analysis at the Department of Homeland Security. So describe some of those unique intelligence products and where do they fit in between kind of the military side and the civilian side of the rest of the intelligence community.
Well, that's a good question. And we do a lot of different kinds of products, and some of them do look sort of traditional, the kinds of things you'd expect to see from CIA or DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency. But one thing we have in the department that is truly unique is a lot of data about travel travelers, immigrants, just lots of information, and about cyber incidents and intrusions. So our what we're exploring is creative new ways of looking at that data in combination with information from the intelligence community to see how we can enrich their analysis and what new things that we can discover about the homeland that we can then share with our local law enforcement partners. It takes a variety of different forms of statistical analyses and sort of data reductions, but we're still playing around with that, but it's interesting.
You mentioned cyber. Is that a big facet of what it is you have to handle?
Well, the department has a very important responsibility to secure what we call the .gov network, to secure the government systems. And as you can see in the recent Quadrennial Homeland Security Review, we've now made cyber a major mission pillar of the department, and we're really building up our capabilities to do that. My office's job is to provide the analytics support, and right now I do that with people who are embedded in the part of the department that focuses on cyber. But again, we're trying to grow that capability because we have all of this data that, frankly, we don't have enough people to look at. It would be great to be able, and we're working on this, but it would be great to be able to use that data to identify trends and patterns. And ideally, we'd like to get to a place where we're helping to do predictive analysis on cyber intrusions to support the department's mission.
I was going to say, you mentioned all this data coming in, and the problem with all that data for everybody is, how do you make sense of it? How do you make intelligence out of it? What kinds of tools and processes are you putting in place to convert the data into usable information?
That's a great question, and we're leveraging work that's gone on already in the intelligence community. They have had, you know, a long-standing issue with large volumes of data. So we're taking tools that have already been developed for collaboration and for data analysis, and adapting them. And sometimes what that really means is taking them out of the highly classified environment in which they were developed and putting them on our secret level systems and even on our unclassified systems so that we can share the data and collaborate with our partners who are operating at lower classification levels. So mostly we're stealing good ideas and adapting them to our own environment.
I think we call that best practices.
Yeah.
So let's talk about contractors. Are contractors used in this process too?
Yes, they are. And this is a tough area for the department because we've been challenged a lot on having too many contractors.
Okay.
When we were first stood up, of course, when you're trying to do something quickly and you don't have all the skill sets that you need, and we ended up having a lot of contractors. Over the years, that number has steadily come down. We're still at a place, especially in my office, I think, where our congressional overseers think we are still too reliant on contractors. But we have, I think, a pretty good plan to sort of adjust our ratio to a place where everyone will be more comfortable. I want to make clear, though, that there is a very legitimate role for contractors, both in my office and in the department as a whole. And now we're just taking the time to take a look and decide, yes, this is where we want to use contractors because we want to have that ability to surge, ebb and flow. And also they bring a specialized skill set that we may not be able to maintain in our workforce. But we want that to be a conscious decision and sort of not an accident of how we were stood up. And we're making a lot of progress in that area, but there's still room for improvement.
So in the realignment plan, what's your timeline for getting it finished, and can you just implement it, or does it go up the flagpole to the secretary?
It's been reviewed in the department, and it hasn't been officially signed off, but I've gotten indications that we're in pretty good shape. And again, we had to have those dialogues with Congress. It's not a reorganization, so it doesn't really require congressional approval, but we want to engage with our oversight committees to make sure that they kind of understand where we're going and it makes sense to them, and it does. So I think we'll be probably ready to go final with all this in a month or so, and then the challenge will be continuing to try to make our case for additional resources in some of those key mission areas, like the supporting the state and locals, increasing cyber analysis and those kinds of things.
I think it's an important point that you made, the difference between a reorganization and a realignment. Some might say that's semantics, but it's not. There's a very distinct difference there.
Well, there's, I think, a legal difference in terms of the role of Congress, but this really is a fairly minor tweaking of what we had in the organization. So I don't think we're cheating by calling it a realignment, but yeah, you're right. There is a distinction.
And also, when you get the realignment process up and running and done and in place, and how will you measure success? How will you at some point be able to go, got it, done? How do you measure that?
That's a really good question, because performance metrics, as you know, are challenging. And we're spending a lot of time now, not just in INA, but in the department as a whole, in trying to figure out what are logical and understandable so that there you can actually have a conversation with the public about how you're measuring your success. And I'm trying to focus my metrics on how well I'm meeting my customers' requirements. And in order to actually be able to measure, you have to have data. So we're creating, feedback forms.
Okay.
And sending people out to interview people and say, did you like this? Did you not like this? What would you like to see more of? And so we're going to attempt, we've tried to define what we think success looks like for our various customer sets. And now we're trying to put in place the measurement tools to measure that. So I'm not going to measure so much my organizational effectiveness. I'm going to measure the outputs of my organization and how well I'm serving my customers.